It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If you missed Craig Counsell, spoiler alert, Spiegs did not growl at him. That was disappointing. Everything else happened, though. You'll hear some of that coming up in 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's absolutely worth hearing. Some interesting stuff in there from the always honest Craig Counsell.
Yeah, it was polarizing in the reaction. So we'll be curious how the 5 o'clock audience, if you will, takes it in. But I was just kind of teasing a few things that we were going to get to in the 5 o'clock hour. And one of the things I said was, like, big things coming. And then Texter said, is Parkins leaving? I was like, ah, Christ. No. I just want to I'll just say it and get it out of the way. I don't want to string anyone along with that. But this is very cool for me personally and professionally. I'm very excited about it. The next time I will be doing broadcasting after today will be Monday and Tuesday from Los Angeles, filling in for Colin Cowherd. That is...
Thank you. That's really cool, man. So that's radio show and TV show?
TV only.
Okay.
Filling in on Fox Sports 1. So just filling in on TV. But, you know, biggest spot of my career for sure and by far. So that's 3 hours solo national TV. No one else. There's no other show that really does that. I mean, Dan Patrick's show is on as a TV simulcast, but it's mostly a radio show. Colin's thing is a radio show and a TV show, but I'm just doing the TV. Someone else will be doing the radio just because that's how the business works these days. But yeah, man. So 3 hours national TV solo for filling in on Fox Sports 1 for their biggest and longest show. I'm very excited about it. So fly to LA Sunday. Going to take off from the show for 2 days, and then I'll be back here Tuesday night to be back Wednesday with the guys. I know you're off next Wednesday, but very, very, very excited about it professionally. And so people want to check that out, they can do that next Monday and Tuesday.
That's very, very cool, man. Enjoy it. Kill
Thank
it.
You.
We know you will.
Danny Parkins, remember that name.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. So that's happening. I'm pumped about it. But anyway, sir.
Yes, sir.
You were at the Cubs game last night. I still feel like we haven't gotten enough Rolling Stones stories.
We haven't, because I was there with Carl Denson, who is musical royalty, old friend of Lenny Kravitz, played the sax on Let Love Rule, including and sax parts on all over those first three Lenny Kravitz records, but has been a member of the Rolling Stones for a decade. Ended up sitting with him, and he was telling me some stuff, just like little bits and pieces. Says, they never see Mick. Very rarely to see Mick, like, backstage or hanging. Mick's kind of in his own world. But Keith will hang. Keith will hang for a bit. And I thought this was cool. Every day at 7 o'clock, before a show, in his dressing room, Keith Richards has shepherd's pie. So they must get him shepherd's pie from some local restaurant, or they've got a chef who makes him shepherd's pie. And he will invite different members of the band and their loved ones to come and sit with him in his dressing room and have shepherd's pie at 7 o'clock before the show. Thought that was
he's got to have a chef, right?
I would.
There's no way he's risking Cincinnati shepherd's pie and then Seattle shepherd's pie.
That was not he was not a good boxer, by the way. Cincinnati shepherd's pie.
Yeah. I think he would always drop his left.
Yeah, he battled Ray Boom Boom Mancini 1 year for the welterweight title. I gotta
think that on the jumbo jet, that the 737 that the Stones fly on, there's a seat for a chef.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
For Keith's shepherd's pie.
He said the other thing about Keith, if you're ever lucky enough to shake Keith's hands, you'll be it's remarkable just how soft and uncalloused they are. And when you think about it, the man has never actually worked a day of anything. It is entire life.
Playing a guitar and dancing and singing is not work.
I mean,
it's not labor.
I don't think he's changed one of his own guitar strings in probably 60 years.
Anything that Keith Richard doesn't sing, because that sounds like chalk on a blackboard squeaking away. You've been to enough of these shows in person. When he does his solo and the rest of them go backstage, all the people in the audience go to the restroom as well.
Oh, my God, Les. It's horrible. Keith made a couple of really cool solo records in there, and he sang some great tunes. So who mentioned Happy during categories? I think it was young Peter Hansen mentioned Happy. So anyway, but yeah, no, the man hasn't worked very much, and his hands are very soft, and he has shepherd's pie at 7 o'clock.
I mean, that's great.
Through and through, Speaks. Love through and through.
Yeah, man. Come on, Grobber. It's the first time I've ever disagreed with the Grobber.
Well, anything. Now he can't defend himself. So congratulations on winning the argument.
Nailed it.
Well, that's cool, man.
Yeah,
that's cool that you were there last night.
It was very cool. You know who else was there last night, Danny? Were the Philadelphia Phillies. And that is an organization that you want to be. That is a team that has been looking up at times at the Atlanta Braves, who seem to be a juggernaut, re-signing all their own guys to incredible deals. But the Phillies have just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Even when they make the World Series, but they don't win, they keep pushing. And John Middleton spends stupid money by his own admission. And it's sort of a battle between stupid money and intelligent spending, isn't it? As you look at these two organizations, they spend what they must to extend Zach Wheeler. They spend what they must to extend Aaron Nola, while also paying $300 million for Trey Turner after spending $315 million for Bryce Harper. They just keep pushing and pushing and pushing in an attempt to be great. And right now, they are absolutely great. They are arguably the best team in baseball with very few weaknesses at all.
They are a great team. So if the question is, am I jealous of them? I wanted the Cubs to have Bryce Harper badly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bryce Harper, you know, baseball players struggle with coolness. Like, they like crossover appeal. You know, Javi Baez is cool. He's cool to Cubs fans, you know. But there's very few baseball players that have the Ken Griffey Jr. crossover appeal of cool anymore. In the modern age of media and social media and superstardom and celebrity, how many baseball players are cooler than Bryce Harper?
No, it's that's for sure. But also,
and he was friends with Chris Bryant. His dog was named Wrigley. Like he was one that I wanted bad for the Cubs.
And the Cubs need a superstar. They have needed a superstar for a long, long time. A couple years ago, they needed a superstar and they didn't get one. And in the year of the shortstops, when they were all out there and available, the first guy that I wanted was Trey Turner. And there's Trey Turner last night with the two bombs and another RBI single going the opposite way later. And I know it was a very bad first half last year, and then the Phillies crowd got him back. He was pretty damn good down the stretch. And in the postseason, he's really good right now. And so two options for the Cubs in terms of being able to have gotten a superstar over the last couple years. Would Trey Turner have taken $330 million from the Cubs as opposed to $300 million from the Phillies? They swooped in, got him first among all the shortstops, 11 years, $300 million for Trey Turner. Could they have swooped in and offered him $330 and outbid for him? Because Dansby Swanson at 177 is much more intelligent, keeps them fungible, is the shortest of the bunch. And I say all this knowing very well I argued for the wisdom in getting Dansby. And he was the best of the bunch over the course of a full season last year. But Trey Turner is a dude who you can actually lean on as a superstar in a way that Dansby never will. So are they better if they do that instead? Would it have been worth it to have done that instead?
I mean, last year, Dansby was the best of the four shortstops, right? He had the best year of all the guys. This year, he is obviously not. It's the shortest money of the four guys. Turner is and was the better player at the time. You definitely were clamoring for it. Would they have been better if they had Trey Turner instead of Dansby Swanson? Mm-hmm. I mean, this year the answer is yes. Last year the answer is no. But neither year they're good enough. This team's not a Trey Turner. I mean, how much better is Trey Turner than Dansby Swanson?
I think Trey Turner is a lot better than Dansby Swanson. He's got.
But I mean, over the course of 162, is he a win better? Is he two wins better?
If he's at his best, he's a couple of wins better.
This team's not a couple of wins away.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be reductive and Bernstein you out with just like pure war and all of that, because it goes back to, you know, like you said, soft factor, superstar in the lineup, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But if Dansby's a three-win player and Trey Turner's a five-win player or a six-win player, this team isn't two or three wins away from being that good.
In 2021, Trey Turner was a seven-win player, and in 2022, he was a 6.4. So,
well, but when Dan, I mean, but I mean, we can do Dansby too, right?
Yep.
When Dansby was winning gold gloves, playing 160 games and hitting, you know, 25 home runs, gold glove in 160 games.
Mm-hmm.
What was he? I can pull it up.
Yeah, I think he was a five and change.
You know, right. So that's what I'm saying. Like,
yep.
his best is also not, again, it's, so his best is about two wins below, a win and a half below, yeah, 4.8 and 5.5.
But he
for 23 and 22.
He is, Trey Turner is a superstar, and this Cubs team still needs it. It is absolutely a moment of hindsight to be looking at and to be thinking about how this team doesn't have a guy that they can positively lean on. And there's Trey showing you some last night. And I know his run in Philly hasn't been, you know, fully superstar styled in terms of all of last year so far, and a little bit of an injury this year to go along with it. But that's one thing. All right, then here's the other superstar option that might have been. December 23, the Yankees trade for Juan Soto, okay? And we had these conversations. There was no spot for Juan Soto. He's never played first base. He's still never played first base. Cubs at that point were locked in to Seiya in right and Ian Happ in left. Could they have put Juan Soto at DH? Sure. Could they have put Seiya or Happ at DH? Could they have tried to teach one of the three of them to play first base instead of trading for Michael Busch? Could have maybe tried to do that. Or taught Morel first base instead of third base and tried to do that? Yeah, but then you are sacrificing defense and it's sketchy. But how about the bat of Juan Soto in this lineup instead? And I've got some possibilities on the deal they could have made to kind of be a comp for what the Yankees gave up, because the Yankees gave up a lot. So, and I can go through that and with some of the specifics of the kids and the prospects, but are you sitting here, Cub fans, saying you wish you had given up a lot of the possible future for Juan Soto and what he might have given this lineup this year? And that one for me is now a yes. It would have been complicated positionally to try and figure out how to make it work. Might have meant that they had to make another trade. It might have meant that they would have had to try and do something to free up a corner outfield spot. But having Juan Soto here would have made a massive, massive difference.
So, like, that one, I don't know any Cub fan that would say no. Because the assumption is if you get Juan Soto and he comes to Wrigley and experiences success, who would want to leave it? Because it's such an amazing place. And we've talked about, like, superstars on the Cubs have it really good because you get the money, the fame, the adoration, the off-field investment opportunities and marketability without the meanness of New York and Boston or Philly. So it's a pretty great place to be a superstar. You know, you trade for a rental and he leaves, it's a disaster and it's embarrassing and there's egg on your face. But a lefty slugger who hits the ball over the wall and walks and is one of the three best hitters in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how anyone says no to that, especially with the hindsight of how poorly this team has slugged this year. But, I mean, I'm not even going to say that would be hindsight for me. I've been, you know, kind of rudimentary in my analysis of this team the last two seasons. They ball go far, team go far. They don't have enough guys that have the ball go far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's basically been my stance on this team for 30 months at this point. By the way, I should mention baseball coverage on the Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Do you have anything else on this? Because there is some breaking baseball news locally that is very relevant.
Oh, no, let's go ahead and do that. All good.
Do you see who has come out of his hole and made comments to the Sun-Times? Darryl Van Scowen has an exclusive with Kenny Williams. The headline.
Good job by Darryl, who's had a nice relationship with Kenny through the years.
He better stay out of our business. He better stay out of White Sox business.
That is referenced here. The headline is exclusive. Ex-White Sox VP Ken Williams wants another title, open to return to baseball. I'm going to read you some of the quotes now from the piece, and you should read the entire thing on the Sun-Times website. Again, good job by Darryl Van Scowen. The lead is, Ken Williams was asked to talk about what life after baseball is like. The first quote, "Who told you I was done with baseball?" Williams told the Sun-Times by phone. Later on in the story, to be a part of winning a championship is a very special thing. And once you have it, it kind of gnaws at you. And man, over the last few years, especially knowing the talent we had, it's an achy feeling, almost a crippling feeling to not accomplish that goal. So yeah, I'd love to be a part of one more, and then I can say goodbye. He lamented the Sox rash of, quote, odd and crippling injuries. Quote, the end result wasn't good, and sports is an unforgiving world. Says the firing hit him hard. I can't deny that it did, but I had conversations with Jerry that said, hey, if you feel like you need a different voice, it's not going to affect our relationship. I made that promise and I kept it. I don't comment on anything White Sox. You haven't heard me say one word about that whole scenario and the replacement in effect, and you won't, out of respect for Jerry, just Jerry, end quote. As I used to say back in the day, that's White Sox business and it's not my business anymore. If I don't get that call, then you could write about life after baseball. I don't know if it's sitting in the GM chair again, my ego doesn't need it, or serving as an advisor. Accomplishing the goal is accomplishing the goal. It's a desire to help a club in whatever capacity seems to be the best fit. I don't think I have to worry about that in terms of a future baseball job would likely be with another team. I don't think I have to worry about that because when you're relieved of your duties, that is a strong indication that you're not wanted.
Good read. Oh, man.
He said that about being bitter. He said, quote, I would have liked to say goodbye to the people in the front office and any fans that supported us in my tenure, but it didn't unfold that way, and that's the way it goes. He apparently has had some feelers. But he completely divorced himself from baseball at the start of the year, saying, somebody a month into the season had to tell me what was going on, and I was like, oh, wow. He said he went cold turkey. Quote, I just needed a break, and I needed to miss it. I needed to feel that thing. They say when something in your life happens unexpectedly, you should give it a year before making decisions. It may be a situation where the wind takes you away. Sometimes you take time off and are forgotten, or people reassess you and determine you're better than what they thought and will give you an opportunity. Or people reassess you and determine you're better than what the last guy thought and will give you an opportunity, end quote. Kenny Williams.
It's interesting. Well, you know, good for him for taking some time away. He's been locked and loaded in baseball for a long, long time, and it got very strange and very odd. I don't think he'll ever get a GM job again, but I could see him being.
I could see him higher.
As a president
A role in baseball somewhere with all the great stuff that he's done, you know, with outreach and community outreach stuff, and growing the game. Like, I think he would be just fine in a role like that.
Well, and he and Theo worked closely together on several issues with the manager's office. Yeah. And Kenny's a really good communicator with a lot of friends in the game, and a role like that in the game would make a lot of sense. But it sounds like he wants a role with a team.
Sounds like he wants a role with a team. I just am glad we have Kenny Williams quotes back in the universe. Offer is extended.
Wearing my shades so that you guys don't see the shock in my eyes.
Offer is extended. I don't know that I have the authority to do this, but I will do it anyway. Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, both have open job offers to be baseball contributors on The Score and specifically the Parkinson Spiegel Show.
That's good of you. Yeah, you didn't even ask me about that. You know what? I'll let either one of them. I'll tell you right now. They can come co-host Hit and Run on a Sunday morning.
Oh, that show that you do every other week?
Yeah. At least 3 out of 4, Danny. Okay? 3 out of 4 for my 6th day of work a week, sir. While the band is doing other things and the PBP is rolling. Okay? Sir?
No, you grind. You grind. Sean Sears, I'd like the stats on that if he's 3 out of 4 this year. If you don't mind. Little research project we could work on here.
Hell, they can host one of the weeks that I'm off.
That's what I was thinking.
I'll be on this weekend, by the way. I'll be there on Sunday. Hit and Run. Be right here, as a matter of fact, on Sunday.
Yeah, it's like when Jimmy Kimmel takes off and Martin Short comes in and hosts. It's like, oh, okay. Dude, you'd be fine with Kenny Williams hosting Hit and Run.
Martin Short doing Jiminy Glick on the Jimmy Kimmel Show all week long. Bill Hader, Sean Hayes, every single one of them. Bill Maher. I mean, just absolute gold. Martin Short is one of our living comedic geniuses that needs to be protected at all costs, frankly.
Yeah, I didn't see Sean Hayes or Marr.
Oh,
I saw Hader, and it was there's something about making Hader break. He's got one of the truly great laughs in show business. That is spectacular. But yeah, to circle it back around full circle, I wish that Tom Ricketts would have opened up the pocketbook for Bryce Harper. They would be a lot better and a lot more fun and a lot more interesting. So, yes.
I could talk.
Yeah, yes. I'm jealous. I'm jealous of their $300 million contracts, plural, that Kyle Schwarber has realized his full potential in Philly, that they are roughly 20 games better than the Cubs at this point of the season. Yeah, it's a lot. Craig Counsell, interesting, direct, challenges us. It's fascinating in a lot of ways. You'll hear from the manager of the Cubs next on The Score.
Please welcome the manager, number 30, Craig Counsell.
I know it's official that I'm a Cub now and I'm talking to Danny Parkins. You know what I mean?
Craig Counsell.
Nobody is interested in your takes, I promise. I promise.
God, that
I
checks
promise.
Out.
What are they tuning into right now?
This guy over here, it's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. You're a guest, Craig.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Did you see the meme? You were memed very well last week with the hat head.
No, I try to stay away from that. I think that's healthy for me.
Don't you think he needs somebody in his life that tells him when he's been memed? You think?
We could be that for you, Craig.
Oh, God.
You guys are so much for me already. I don't want to put too much on your plate.
All right, fine, smartass. That's Craig Counsell, manager of the Chicago Cubs.
We mean a lot to him. I think that's what he said. You guys are already so much for me.
You guys are so much for me already.
We're not going to be the people in his life to tell him what he's been memed.
Only imagine how little we mean to him.
Craig Counsell with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Craig Counsell, kind enough to join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Thanks for the time, as always, Craig. How's it going, man?
Good, good. Thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing well. When do we get any reinforcements? There's a lot of injured guys. I know Merriweather threw yesterday. Any timeline on any of these guys coming back to help you out a little bit?
I mean, I think kind of the general timeline, nobody's into rehab games yet. So I think the general timeline for a group of guys is post All-Star break and the second half of July. I think Mark Leiter's probably trending towards the first one back just because he hasn't missed that much. I'd say Leiter and Assad are probably the early ones. And then, second half of July is kind of the Julian Merriweather, I'd say Merriweather and Jordan Wicks kind of second half of July.
What have you learned about some of the young guys who have been forced into some arduous situations in their stead over the past couple of weeks?
Well, I think you're talking about Luke Little and Porter Hodge probably.
Yeah.
And I think they've done great with these opportunities, and it's been, you know, for Luke, we've seen him most of the year, and he's done a great job, I think, since coming back up, of just sticking to like what he needs to do to be better. And it's really about you have to be two pitches. You can't just be one pitch in the strike zone. And he's the slider. Since the slider's been in the strike zone, it's no coincidence that is, you know, he's been a better pitcher. And then Porter, really, it's, I mean, we're 15 innings into a big league career. So, you know, the learning that's coming at him is really fast, but he is learning fast. And we've seen good results from that.
Last night, the early innings kind of felt like the season. Like, balls hit hard in the first inning. My Nico is, 6 inches from a double down the line, and Castellanos makes that catch on Bellinger. And then they get a two-run opposite field double from a backup catcher. It's like, when you're going through a stretch like this, does the mood in the dugout go south when things have been bad already to that point?
No, because you got to go out there and compete still, and we all know that doesn't help you. Because you got competition coming right ahead of you, you better have kind of your game face on, so to speak, at all times, because there's more coming at you. So, you keep competing, you keep doing your best. You can kind of tell a story about how the game didn't go your way. Nobody's going to feel bad for you about that. You just got to do a little better.
Do you scoreboard or standings watch at this point of the year?
I do not. The scoreboard, I think everybody scoreboard watches because it's we're staring at it every day, so it's hard to say you don't scoreboard watch. Standings watch, no.
Even though you're staring at those flags every day.
Well, if you're staring at the flags, you're staring at the scoreboards, I think.
That's true. It's a good point. It is in the same general direction. I guess just like, so you were saying, you know.
Do you lack peripheral vision?
No, I can take it all in, and it's all right there on my app.
Nice.
Smartphones. They're unbelievable. But like you were saying, you know, All-Star break, late July. But then you have the reality of, okay, we're in last place. We're double-digit games out. Like, it's almost like, is that going to be too little too late given the realities of where you are in the standings?
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't do me any good to think like that. You think about today's game and what do you control? And that's how you have to go about this. I can't worry about 12 games down the road. You worry about tonight. You worry about trying to get a result tonight. You know, when you look up in 12 days, you're going to be, you know, after a product of your results those previous 12 days. And that sounds, it's how you have to do it. And we'll keep doing it that way.
You know, it's funny, Craig, like through the years, so many times watching baseball, covering baseball is like, well, they're struggling. It's about time to fire the hitting coach. You know, it's like, it's so often just kind of a default first step that sort of happens or whatever. And I've fought against that because, like, hitting is so hard, and individual relationships with hitting coaches and anecdotal stuff, like, it can be a tricky thing. But looking at this team, I keep thinking, God, there seems to be some kind of group hitting thing that's wrong. Something's broken on a group level with the overall hitting approach. So can you help us understand if that is even a thing? Like the overall group's mindset at the plate, thinking of it as one cohesive thing, it looking the way it looks right now is troubling. Is that a concept we can even get behind, that you all share one sort of concept in that way?
Well, I mean, I think there's, like, you go into games and you share a concept for sure. Is the concept wrong? I think there's individual nights you can say, yeah, I mean, the guy did a better job of that than we expected. But I think last night we were, you know, I think we were on the right concept. We didn't get hits from it. And that's, you know, you didn't get hits. We didn't square the ball up quite enough. But usually, like, look, it's on, you know, I think hitting is on the, you know, the individuals, and the individuals kind of collectively doing well and taking their turns doing well together creates a circle. And then you get some, you know, your best players do some really impressive things as compared to the league. And that's what creates offense. We've struggled in a couple areas this year, and that's what's led to, you know, frankly, not a good enough offense.
Where do you think you've struggled the most when you think about it?
Well, the number one is we've struggled from offense at the catcher position. There's no question about that. And then, you know, I don't think we have any players kind of having, you know, the all-star type seasons offensively. So nobody's kind of exceeding expectations. So that caps it. And then the unlucky part is the runners in scoring position stuff is that's the point where you can kind of point to just, we just haven't caught breaks there. And that's, you know, I think statistically plays out too. And that hurts you as well.
You know, when we had Carter Hawkins on at Cubs convention, like to ask him the question or anyone in his role, like who are you guys expecting big things from that maybe fans and media aren't talking about? And he singled out one name to us this year, and he said Miguel Amaya. And then you just talked about the catching position and offensive production. What hasn't gone according to how you guys clearly projected it internally? Like, why hasn't it been working?
Yeah, I mean, the why is he you know, he's a young player that I think in 170 plate appearances last year showed a really positive first step. And there's just been regression to that this year. And he's struggled this year. He's a young player, and hopefully these at bats are a teacher for him at some point. But we haven't got production from that spot, and it hurts your offense.
We're talking to Craig Counsell here, Parkins and Spiegel on the Score. You know, we get to talk to you every couple of weeks, and so now this is past the halfway point of the season. So I was thinking about things that we asked you before the season started, and we could just check back in. I remember we joked about, like, the only thing you got asked about more than yourself was Christopher Morel. How has he been defensively at third base now that we're a half a season in relative to what you expected him to be defensively?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is progress that is, we have moved forward there. He has gotten better. I think I'm very confident in saying that. You know, I think now the question is, like, how much better can we get the second half of the season? And then when we evaluate that, is like, is that going to be good enough moving forward to commit to the player? And I think that's kind of where we're at with it. And I think that's pretty fair. But he has gotten better for sure. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy about that part. You know, probably the offense has been disappointing, but he has gotten better defensively.
Do you think that's at all carried over because of the defense? Like, is it impacting him at the plate?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
What have you learned about this bunch, about some of these guys? And now that you've had a half a season and had all the spring to get to know them, what are some things you feel like you know now that you didn't know then?
About who?
I can get specific if you like. I was going to let you go to whoever you wanted to in the lineup, but you know, how about Ian? How about Ian Happ and Nico Horner? What have you learned about those guys?
Well, I mean, I think Ian is very, what I love about Ian is very, like, dedicated and serious about his craft. And the detail that he kind of prepares with is really cool. For Nico, it's just like, it's kind of Energizer Bunny, man. Like, it's just going and going and going. And his kind of relentlessness and grit, like, they, you know, that's kind of a word that gets thrown around a lot, but like, he is like the definition of grit. Like, it never stops. And that's a really great trait, and it rubs off on other people.
Oh, we'll tell those guys. We get a chance to talk to those guys. We'll tell them. I'll give you Dansby Swanson and Seiya Suzuki. What have you learned about managing those guys?
You know, I Dansby is really interesting because he's been on some other teams, kind of unlike those other guys, those first couple guys you mentioned. And so just some perspective from having success in some other places has been interesting for sure. You know, Dansby's season, I think, like, you know, he hasn't had the offensive season that he's wanted to, for sure. You know, and I think the knee kind of messing him up early in the season that derailed him a little bit. Hopefully we can get him back on track for the second half. I think that's really important to get him I think he's doing in a good spot health-wise now, but it certainly derailed him for a little bit. You know, I think Say is having a pretty good season. I think, you know, if you look at his numbers right now and you look at where offense in the league is, he's having a pretty good offensive season. Offense is different this year. It's a little bit down. If you look at Say's numbers, he is doing a pretty darn good job. It's quiet. It doesn't feel like super loud, but he's doing a pretty good job.
I'll ask you about one more guy in like the micro. We get asked about him more than maybe anyone else by fans, and that's PCA, right? Like the speed is easy to see. The glove is easy to see. So hyped as a prospect and who he came here for in a trade. He has that at bat in the Saturday game against Milwaukee where he rallies 0-2 count, drives the ball to right field, puts you guys ahead, seems like a mature at bat. He's had stand-up triples. That's easy to profile. But, like, what do you think he profiles as an offensive player at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, Pete is a player that there's been players – very many similar players like this, and it's just it's easy to see his physical gifts for even for fans, right? It's just they just jump out at you, and those players have come with the biggest expectations, and they often come with the largest learning curve too. That's just kind of the way it is, and so Pete's like still needs at bats. There's no question. Like experience just facing major league pitching, like sometimes it's the failures too. But we just got to keep Pete going in the right direction. He's an unfinished offensive player. There's no question about unfinished hitter. And we've just got to keep making progress with him as a hitter. It's not always linear. And sometimes it's frankly, some of the at-bats are tough to watch. Right. But we just got to keep making progress with him because it's where there is a great player in there. You don't know when it's going to come out exactly, but there is a great player in there.
We're talking to Craig Counsell. I know, you know, your job is as manager, like you said, win a game today, but you have front office experience. It's July. You understand the conversation around the trade deadline. Theo Epstein once told Speaks and I on the show, like, even if you're in a competitive window, you can never waste an opportunity to sell by like lying to yourself about what you are in that particular year, because those opportunities when you're supposed to be competitive are so infrequent. Do you share that philosophy in general if it came to that?
I'm not sure I understand what he said. Can you...
Yeah, so, I mean, this was in 20, what, Spieg, 17?
It was in 17.
17.
And he was admitting that they were going to have to consider selling if they didn't get it together by around the time the deadline came.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always just look at it like you just got to make good decisions. Like, whatever a good decision is, make the good decision. So it's simple as that. Like, for me, I don't know.
You know, it's an interesting spot, Craig, because like manager value and what it is, I remember during the press conference, you talked very specifically about it's a lot of good decisions kind of lining up and that accumulates the value. Is a half season enough to see what a manager's value is? Because it's been a tough go, as you know.
I don't know. I mean, I know my philosophy hasn't changed there, so I'm going to keep doing that. And I still think that's my job, so that's not going to change.
We were wondering who the best offensive player you had was as a teammate and how it impacted you guys in the lineup when you were like, oh, damn, that guy was carrying us and like the presence of the superstar as a player.
The best offensive season probably that I ever saw was probably Luis Gonzalez in 2001.
I'm looking at it right now. Figured that's where you're going to go. That's pretty good. 57 homers, 142 RBIs, for Luis Gonzalez, OPS over 1.1. So yeah, that's the question. What was the impact for you guys knowing that you had a dude who was just like dominating like that? How did that have an effect on the rest of the lineup? If it did?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was a great offensive team, actually, but it was obviously a good, very good team. I mean, it helped me. I hit in front of them. I mean, I knew I was going to, they weren't going to try to walk me because why would you? But it didn't make me any better, really. You know?
No.
But the thing it helped is that you have one player just creating so many runs. That's what those seasons do. He was by himself just creating a massive number of runs. And so he's basically taking the burden off, you know, players like myself or whoever, other players in the lineup.
So psychologically, does it help Bryson Stott or Alec Bohm to know that they've got superstars around them in the lineup to improve? Is that a real thing in MLB?
Look, I think obviously players having great years, there is some psychological benefit to it. Like, I can't tell you exactly how much. But of course, like watching a guy have a great year around you, he's doing great things for your team that clearly is going to make you feel good.
Hey, you carried him in the 2001 NLCS, okay?
Yeah, maybe. You're right. Maybe for five games. Yep.
See, I'm just saying, give yourself a little credit. All right, Craig. Well, thank you for the time, man, as always. Go get him tonight, and we'll see you at the ballpark soon.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
Thank
Craig.
You. As manager of the Cubs, Craig Counsell, it's Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
Redirect.
All right, everyone have a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. Thank you to Craig Counsell for joining the show today. Happy 21st birthday to Peter Hansen, our terrific intern. I think we've prepared him well for Mully and Haw. Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka, Twitch chat, video stream. Thank you, sirs. Thank you to Sean Sears and for our executive producer, Shane Reardon. Chris Tannehill making us sound better than we are each and every day. For Matt Spiegel, I'm Danny Parkins. We are Parkins and Spiegel. This is The Score.
All right, I got to go here, guys. I got something.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If you missed Craig Counsell, spoiler alert, Spiegs did not growl at him. That was disappointing. Everything else happened, though. You'll hear some of that coming up in 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's absolutely worth hearing. Some interesting stuff in there from the always honest Craig Counsell.
Yeah, it was polarizing in the reaction. So we'll be curious how the 5 o'clock audience, if you will, takes it in. But I was just kind of teasing a few things that we were going to get to in the 5 o'clock hour. And one of the things I said was like big things coming. And then Texter said, is Parkins leaving? I was like, Christ. No, I just want to. So I'll just say it and get it out of the way. I don't want to string anyone along with that, but this is very cool for me personally and professionally. I'm very excited about it. The next time I will be doing broadcasting after today will be Monday and Tuesday from Los Angeles, filling in for Colin Cowherd. That is...
Whoa!
Yeah! Thank you.
That's really cool, man. So that's radio show and TV show?
TV only.
Okay.
Filling in on Fox Sports 1. So just filling in on TV. But, you know, biggest spot of my career for sure and by far. So that's 3 hours solo national TV. No one else, there's no other show that really does that. I mean, Dan Patrick's show is on as a TV simulcast, but it's mostly a radio show. Colin's thing is a radio show and a TV show, but I'm just doing the TV. Someone else will be doing the radio, just because that's how the business works these days. But, yeah, man. So 3 hours national TV solo, for filling in on Fox Sports 1 for their biggest and longest show. I'm very excited about it. So fly to LA Sunday. Going to take off from the show for 2 days, and then I'll be back here Tuesday night to be back Wednesday with the guys. I know you're off next Wednesday, but very, very, very excited about it professionally. And so people want to check that out, they can do that next Monday and Tuesday.
That's very, very cool, man. Enjoy it. Kill
Thank
it.
Thank you.
We know you will.
Danny Parkins. Remember that name.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. So that's happening. I'm pumped about it. But anyway, sir.
Yes, sir.
You were at the Cubs game last night. I still feel like we haven't gotten enough Rolling Stones stories.
We haven't, because I was there with Carl Denson, who is musical royalty, old friend of Lenny Kravitz, played the sax on Let Love Rule, including and sax parts on all over those first three Lenny Kravitz records, but has been a member of the Rolling Stones for a decade. Ended up sitting with him. And he was telling me some stuff, just like little bits and pieces. Says they never see Mick. Very rarely to see Mick, like backstage or hanging. Mick's kind of in his own world. But Keith will hang. Keith will hang for a bit. And I thought this was cool. Every day at 7 o'clock before a show in his dressing room, Keith Richards has shepherd's pie. So they must get him shepherd's pie from some local restaurant, or they've got a chef who makes him shepherd's pie. And he will invite different members of the band and their loved ones to come and sit with him in his dressing room and have shepherd's pie at 7 o'clock before the show. Thought that was
he's got to have a chef, right?
I would. I
There's no
I
way
guess.
He's risking Cincinnati shepherd's pie and then Seattle shepherd's pie.
That was not he was not a good boxer, by the way. Cincinnati shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
I think
he would always drop his left.
Yeah, he battled Ray Boom Boom Mancini one year for the welterweight title. I got to
think that on the jumbo jet, that the 737 that the Stones fly on, there's a seat for a chef.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
For Keith's shepherd's pie.
He said the other thing about Keith, if you're ever lucky enough to shake Keith's hands, you'll be it's remarkable just how soft and uncalloused they are. And when you think about it, the man has never actually worked a day of anything. It is entire life.
Playing a guitar and dancing and singing is not work.
I mean,
it's not labor.
I don't think he's changed one of his own guitar strings in probably 60 years.
Anything that Keith Richard doesn't sing, because that sounds like chalk on a blackboard squeaking away. You've been to enough of these shows in person. When he does his solo and the rest of them go backstage, all the people in the audience go to the restroom as well.
Oh my God, Les, it's horrible. Keith made a couple of really cool solo records in there, and he sang some great tunes. So who mentioned Happy during categories? I think it was young Peter Hansen mentioned Happy. So anyway, but yeah, no, the man hasn't worked very much, and his hands are very soft, and he has shepherd's pie at 7 o'clock.
I mean, that's great.
Through and through, Speaks. Love through and through.
Yeah, man. Come on, Grobber. It's the first time I've ever disagreed with the Grobber. About
well, now he can't defend himself. So congratulations on winning the argument.
Nailed it.
Well, that's cool, man.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Cool that you were there last night.
It was very cool. You know who else was there last night, Danny? Were the Philadelphia Phillies. And that is an organization that you want to be. That is a team that has been looking up at times at the Atlanta Braves, who seem to be a juggernaut, re-signing all their own guys to incredible deals. But the Phillies have just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Even when they make the World Series, but they don't win, they keep pushing. And John Middleton spends stupid money by his own admission. And it's sort of a battle between stupid money and intelligent spending, isn't it? As you look at these two organizations, they spend what they must to extend Zach Wheeler. They spend what they must to extend Aaron Nola, while also paying $300 million for Trey Turner after spending $315 million for Bryce Harper. They just keep pushing and pushing and pushing in an attempt to be great. And right now, they are absolutely great. They are arguably the best team in baseball with very few weaknesses at all.
They are a great team. So if the question is, am I jealous of them? I wanted the Cubs to have Bryce Harper badly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bryce Harper, you know, baseball players struggle with coolness. Like, they like crossover appeal. You know, Javi Baez is cool. He's cool to Cubs fans, you know. But normally, there's very few baseball players that have the Ken Griffey Jr. crossover appeal of cool anymore. In the modern age of media and social media and superstardom and celebrity, how many baseball players are cooler than Bryce Harper.
No, it's well, that's for sure. But also, so,
and I mean, and he was friends with Chris Bryant. His dog was named Wrigley. Like he was one that I wanted bad. For the Cubs.
And the Cubs need a superstar. They have needed a superstar for a long, long time. A couple years ago, they needed a superstar, and they didn't get one. And in the year of the shortstops, when they were all out there and available, the first guy that I wanted was Trey Turner. And there's Trey Turner last night with the two bombs and another RBI single going the opposite way later. And I know it was a very bad first half last year, and then the Phillies crowd got him back. He was pretty damn good down the stretch. And in the postseason, he's really good right now. And so two options for the Cubs in terms of being able to have gotten a superstar over the last couple years. Would Trey Turner have taken $330 million from the Cubs as opposed to $300 million from the Phillies? They swooped in, got him first among all the shortstops, 11 years, $300 million for Trey Turner. Could they have swooped in and offered him $330 and outbid for him? Because Dansby Swanson at $177 is much more intelligent, keeps them fungible, is the shortest of the bunch. And I say all this knowing very well I argued for the wisdom in getting Dansby. And he was the best of the bunch over the course of a full season last year. But Trey Turner is a dude who you can actually lean on as a superstar in a way that Dansby never will. So are they better if they do that instead? Would it have been worth it to have done that instead?
I mean, last year, Dansby was the best of the four shortstops. Right? He had the best year of all of the guys. This year, he is obviously not. It's the shortest money of the four guys. Turner is and was the better player at the time. You definitely were clamoring for it. Would they have been better if they had Trey Turner instead of Dansby Swanson? Mm-hmm. I mean, this year the answer is yes. Last year the answer is no. But neither year they're good enough. This team's not a Trey Turner. I mean, how much better is Trey Turner than Dansby Swanson?
I think Trey Turner is a lot better than Dansby Swanson. He's got,
but I mean, over the course of 162, is he a win better? Is he two wins better?
If he's at his best, he's a couple of wins better.
This team's not a couple of wins away.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be reductive and Bernstein you out with just like pure war and all of that, because it goes back to, you know, like you said, soft factor, superstar in the lineup, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But if Dansby's a three win player and Trey Turner's a five win player or a six win player, this team isn't two or three wins away from being that good.
In 2021, Trey Turner was a seven-win player, and in 2022, he was a 6.4. So,
well, but when I mean, we can do Dansby too, right? Yep. When Dansby was winning Gold Gloves, playing 160 games, and hitting, you know, 25 home runs, Gold Glove in 160 games.
Mm-hmm.
What was he? I can pull it up.
Yeah, I think he was a five and change.
You know, right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, yep. His best is also not, again, it's, so his best is about two wins below, a win and a half below.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 4.8 and 5.5.
But he
for 23 and 22.
He is, Trey Turner is a superstar, and this Cubs team still needs it. It is absolutely a moment of hindsight to be looking at and to be thinking about how this team doesn't have a guy that they can positively lean on. And there's Trey showing you some last night. And I know his run in Philly hasn't been, you know, fully superstar styled in terms of all of last year so far, and a little bit of an injury this year to go along with it. But that's one thing. All right, then here's the other superstar option that might have been. December 23, the Yankees trade for Juan Soto, okay? And we had these conversations. There was no spot for Juan Soto. He's never played first base. He's still never played first base. Cubs at that point were locked in to Seiya in right and Ian Happ in left. Could they have put Juan Soto at DH? Sure. Could they have put Seiya or Happ at DH? Could they have tried to teach one of the three of them to play first base instead of trading for Michael Busch? Could have maybe tried to do that. or taught Morrell first base instead of third base and tried to do that. Yeah, but then you are sacrificing defense, and it's sketchy. But how about the bat of Juan Soto in this lineup instead? And I've got some possibilities on the deal they could have made to kind of be a comp for what the Yankees gave up, because the Yankees gave up a lot. So, and I can go through that and with some of the specifics of the kids and the prospects. But are you sitting here, Cub fans, saying you wish you had given up a lot of the possible future for Juan Soto and what he might have given this lineup this year? And that one for me is now a yes. It would have been complicated positionally to try and figure out how to make it work. Might have meant that they had to make another trade. It might have meant that they would have had to try and do something to free up a corner outfield spot. But having Juan Soto here would have made a massive, massive difference.
So, like, that one, I don't know any Cub fan that would say no. Because the assumption is if you get Juan Soto and he comes to Wrigley and experiences success, who would want to leave it? Because it's such an amazing place, and we've talked about, like, superstars on the Cubs have it really good because you get the money, the fame, the adoration, the off-field investment opportunities and marketability without the meanness of New York and Boston or Philly. So it's a pretty great place to be a superstar. You know, you trade for a rental and he leaves, it's a disaster and it's embarrassing and there's egg on your face. But a lefty slugger who hits the ball over the wall and walks and is one of the three best hitters in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how anyone says no to that, especially with the hindsight of how poorly this team has slugged this year. But, I mean, I'm not even going to say that would be hindsight for me. I've been, you know, kind of rudimentary in my analysis of this team the last two seasons. They ball go far, team go far. They don't have enough guys that have the ball go far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's basically been my stance on this team for 30 months at this point. By the way, I should mention baseball coverage on the Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Do you have anything else on this? Because there is some breaking baseball news locally that is very relevant.
Oh, no. Let's go ahead and do that. All good.
Do you see who has come out of his hole and made comments to the Sun-Times? Darryl Van Scowen has an exclusive with Kenny Williams. The headline.
Good job by Darryl, who's had a nice relationship with Kenny through the years.
He better stay out of our business. He better stay out of White Sox business.
That is referenced here. The headline is exclusive. Ex-White Sox VP Ken Williams wants another title. Open to return to baseball.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to read you some of the quotes now from the piece, and you should read the entire thing on the Sun-Times website. Again, good job by Darryl Van Scowen. The lead is, Ken Williams was asked to talk about what life after baseball is like. The first quote, "Who told you I was done with baseball?" Williams told the Sun-Times by phone. Later on in the story, "To be a part of winning a championship is a very special thing. And once you have it, it kind of gnaws at you. And man, over the last few years, especially knowing the talent we had, it's an achy feeling, almost a crippling feeling to not accomplish that goal. So yeah, I'd love to be a part of one more, and then I can say goodbye." He lamented the Sox rash of, quote, odd and crippling injuries. Quote, "The end result wasn't good, and sports is an unforgiving world." He says the firing hit him hard. "I can't deny that it did, but I had conversations with Jerry that said, hey, if you feel like you need a different voice, it's not going to affect our relationship. I made that promise and I kept it. I don't comment on anything White Sox. You haven't heard me say one word about that whole scenario and the replacement in effect, and you won't, out of respect for Jerry, just Jerry," end quote. "As I used to say back in the day, that's White Sox business and it's not my business anymore. If I don't get that call, then you could write about life after baseball. I don't know if it's sitting in the GM chair again, my ego doesn't need it, or serving as an advisor. Accomplishing the goal is accomplishing the goal. It's a desire to help a club in whatever capacity seems to be the best fit." I don't think I have to worry about that in terms of a future baseball job would likely be with another team. I don't think I have to worry about that because when you're relieved of your duties, that is a strong indication that you're not wanted.
Good read. Oh, man.
He said that about being bitter. He said, quote, I would have liked to say goodbye to the people in the front office and any fans that supported us in my tenure, but it didn't unfold that way, and that's the way it goes. He apparently has had some feelers. But he completely divorced himself from baseball at the start of the year, saying, somebody a month into the season had to tell me what was going on, and I was like, oh, wow. He said he went cold turkey. Quote, I just needed a break, and I needed to miss it. I needed to feel that thing. They say when something in your life happens unexpectedly, you should give it a year before making decisions. It may be a situation where the wind takes you away. Sometimes you take time off and are forgotten, or people reassess you and determine you're better than what they thought and will give you an opportunity. Or people reassess you and determine you're better than what the last guy thought and will give you an opportunity, end quote.
There's
Kenny Williams.
It's interesting. Well, you know, good for him for taking some time away. I mean, he's been locked and loaded in baseball for a long, long time, and it got very strange and very odd. I don't think he'll ever get a GM job again, but I could see him being.
I could see him higher.
As a president
A role in baseball somewhere with all the great stuff that he's done. You know, with outreach and community outreach stuff, and growing the game. Like, I think he would be just fine in a role like that.
Well, and he and Theo worked closely together on several issues with the manager's office. Yeah. And Kenny's a really good communicator with a lot of friends in the game, and a role like that in the game would make a lot of sense. But it sounds like he wants a role with a team.
Sounds like he wants a role with a team. I just am glad we have Kenny Williams quotes back in the universe. Offer
well,
is extended.
Wearing my shades so that you guys don't see the shock in my eyes.
Offer is extended. I don't know that I have the authority to do this, but I will do it anyway. Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams both have open job offers to be baseball contributors on The Score and specifically the Parkinson Spiegel Show.
That's good of you. Yeah, you didn't even ask me about that. You know what? I'll let either one of them. I'll tell you right now, they can come co-host Hit and Run on a Sunday morning.
Oh, that show that you do every other week?
Yeah. At least 3 out of 4, Danny. Okay? 3 out of 4 for my 6th day of work a week, sir. While the band is doing other things and the PBP is rolling. Okay, sir?
No, you grind. You grind. Sean Sears, I'd like the stats on that if he's 3 out of 4 this year. If you don't mind. Little research project we could work on here.
Hell, they can host one of the weeks that I'm off.
That's what I was thinking.
I'll be on this weekend, by the way. I'll be there on Sunday. Hit and Run, be right here, as a matter of fact, on Sunday.
Yeah, it's like when Jimmy Kimmel takes off and Martin Short comes in and hosts. It's like, oh, okay, you'd be fine with Kenny Williams hosting Hit and Run.
Martin Short doing Jiminy Glick on the Jimmy Kimmel Show all week long. Bill Hader, Sean Hayes, every single one of them. Bill Maher. I mean, just absolute gold. Martin Short is one of our living comedic geniuses that needs to be protected at all costs, frankly.
Yeah, I didn't see Sean Hayes or Marr.
Oh,
I saw Hader, and it was there's something about making Hader break. He's got one of the truly great laughs in show business. That is spectacular. But yeah, to circle it back around full circle, I wish that Tom Ricketts would have opened up the pocketbook for Bryce Harper. They would be a lot better and a lot more fun and a lot more interesting. So, yes.
I could talk.
Yeah, yes. I'm jealous. I'm jealous of their $300 million contracts, plural, that Kyle Schwarber has realized his full potential in Philly, that they are roughly 20 games better than the Cubs at this point of the season. Yeah, it's a lot. Craig Counsell, interesting, direct, challenges us. It's fascinating in a lot of ways. You'll hear from the manager of the Cubs next on The Score.
Please welcome the manager, number 30, Craig Counsell.
I know it's official that I'm a Cub now, and I'm talking to Danny Parkins. You know what I mean?
Craig Counsell.
Nobody is interested in your takes, I promise. I promise.
God, that checks out.
What are they tuning into right now?
This guy over here. It's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. You're a guest, Craig.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Did you see the meme? You were memed very well.
last week with the hair, the hat head?
No, I try to stay away from that. I think that's healthy for me.
Don't you think he needs somebody in his life that tells him when he's been memed? You think?
We could be that for you, Craig.
Oh, God.
You guys are so much for me already. I don't want to put too much on your plate.
All right, fine, smartass. That's Craig Counsell, manager of the Chicago Cubs.
We mean a lot to him. I think that's what he said. You guys are already so much for me.
You guys are so much for me already.
We're not going to be the people in his life to tell him what he's been memed.
Only imagine how little we mean to him.
Craig Counsell with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Craig Counsell, kind enough to join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Thanks for the time, as always, Craig. How's it going, man?
Good, good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing well. When do we get any reinforcements? There's a lot of injured guys. I know Merriweather threw yesterday. Any timeline on any of these guys coming back to help you out a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of the general timeline, nobody's into rehab games yet. So I think the general timeline for a group of guys is post All-Star break and the second half of July. I think Mark Leiter's probably trending towards the first one back just because he hasn't missed that much. I'd say Leiter and Assad are probably the early ones. And then, second half of July is kind of the Julian Merriweather, I'd say Merriweather and Jordan Wicks kind of second half of July.
What have you learned about some of the young guys who have been forced into some arduous situations in their stead over the past couple of weeks?
Well, I think you're talking about Luke Little and Porter Hodge probably.
Yeah.
And I think they've you know, done great with these opportunities, and it's been, you know, for Luke, we've seen him most of the year, and you know, he's done a great job, I think, since coming back up, of just sticking to like what he needs to do to be better. And it's really about, you have to be two pitches. You can't just be one pitch in the strike zone. And since the slider's been in the strike zone, it's no coincidence that is, you know, he's been a better pitcher. And then Porter, really, we're 15 innings into a big league career. So, you know, the learning that's coming at him is really fast, but he is learning fast, and we've seen good results from that.
Last night, the early innings kind of felt like the season. Like, balls hit hard in the first inning. Nico is, 6 inches from a double down the line, and Castellanos makes that catch on Bellinger. And then they get a two-run opposite field double from a backup catcher. It's like, when you're going through a stretch like this, does the mood in the dugout go south when things have been bad already to that point?
No, because you got to go out there and compete still, and we all know that doesn't help you. Because when you're you got competition coming right ahead of you, you better have kind of your game face on, so to speak, at all times, because there's more coming at you. So, you know, you keep competing, you keep doing your best. You can kind of tell a story about how the game didn't go your way. Nobody's going to feel bad for you about that. You just got to do a little better.
Do you scoreboard or standings watch at this point of the year?
I do not. I mean, the scoreboard, I think everybody scoreboard watches because it's, we're staring at it every day. So it's hard to say you don't scoreboard watch. Standings watch, no.
Even though you're staring at those flags every day.
Well, if you're staring at the flags, you're staring at the scoreboards, I think.
That's true. That's a good point. It is in the same general direction. I guess just like, so you were saying, you know.
Do you lack peripheral vision?
No, I can take it all in, and it's all right there on my app. Smartphones, they're unbelievable. But like you were saying, you know, All-Star break, late July, but then you have the reality of, okay, we're in last place, we're double-digit games out, like, it's almost like, is that going to be too little too late given the realities of where you are in the standings?
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't do me any good to think like that. You think about today's game and what do you control? And that's how you have to go about this. I can't worry about 12 games down the road. You worry about tonight. You worry about trying to get a result tonight. And then,
you know, when you look up in 12 days, you're going to be, you know, after a product of your results those previous 12 days. And that sounds, it's just, it's how you have to do it. And we'll keep doing it that way.
You know, it's funny, Craig, like through the years, so many times watching baseball, covering baseball is like, well, they're struggling. It's about time to fire the hitting coach. You know, it's like it's so often just kind of a default first step that sort of happens or whatever. And I've fought against that because, like, hitting is so hard, and individual relationships with hitting coaches and anecdotal stuff, like, it can be a tricky thing. But looking at this team, I keep thinking, God, there seems to be some kind of group hitting thing that's wrong. Something's broken on a group level with the overall hitting approach. So can you help us understand if that is even a thing? Like the overall group's mindset at the plate, thinking of it as one cohesive thing, it looking the way it looks right now is troubling. Is that a concept we can even get behind, that you all share one sort of concept in that way?
Well, I mean, I think there's, like, you go into games and you share a concept for sure. Like, is the concept wrong? I mean, I think there's individual nights you can say, yeah, I mean, the guy did a better job of that than we expected. But I think last night we were, you know, I think we were on the right concept. We didn't get hits from it. And that's, you know, you didn't get hits. We didn't square the ball up quite enough. But usually, like, look, it's on, you know, I think hitting is on the, you know, the individuals, and the individuals kind of collectively doing well and taking their turns doing well together creates a circle. And that's, and then you get some, you know, your best players do some really impressive things as compared to the league. And that's what creates offense. And we've struggled in a couple areas this year, and that's what's led to, you know, frankly, not a good enough offense.
Where do you think you've struggled the most when you think about it?
Well, the number one is we've struggled from offense at the catcher position. There's no question about that. And then, you know, I think I don't think we have any players kind of having, you know, the all-star type seasons offensively. So nobody's kind of exceeding expectations. So that caps it. And then the unlucky part is the runners in scoring position stuff is that's the point where you can kind of point to we just haven't caught breaks there. And that's, you know, I think statistically plays out too. And that hurts you as well.
You know, when we had Carter Hawkins on at Cubs convention, like to ask him the question, or anyone in his role, like, who are you guys expecting big things from that maybe fans and media aren't talking about? And he singled out one name to us this year, and he said Miguel Amaya. And then you just talked about the catching position and offensive production. What hasn't gone according to how you guys clearly projected it internally? Like, why hasn't it been working?
Yeah, I mean, the why is he you know, he's a young player that I think in 170 plate appearances last year showed a really positive first step. And there's just been regression to that this year. And he's struggled this year. He's a young player. And hopefully these at bats are a teacher for him at some point. But we haven't got production from that spot. And it hurts your offense.
We're talking to Craig Counsell here, Parkinson Spiegel on the Score. You know, we get to talk to you every couple of weeks, and so now this is past the halfway point of the season. So I was thinking about things that we asked you before the season started, and we could just check back in. I remember we joked about, like, the only thing you got asked about more than yourself was Christopher Morel. How has he been defensively at third base now that we're a half a season in relative to what you expected him to be defensively?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is progress that is, we have moved forward there. He has gotten better. I think I'm very confident in saying that. You know, I think now the question is, like, how much better can we get the second half of the season? And then when we evaluate that, is like, is that going to be good enough moving forward to commit to the player? And I think that's kind of where we're at with it. And that's, I think that's pretty fair. But he has gotten better for sure. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy about that part. You know, we've probably the offense has been disappointing, but he has gotten better defensively.
Do you think that's at all carried over because of the defense? Like, is it impacting him at the plate?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
What have you learned about this bunch, about some of these guys? And now that you've had a half a season and had all the spring to get to know them, what are some things you feel like you know now that you didn't know then?
About who?
I can get specific if you like. I was going to let you go to whoever you wanted to in the lineup. But, you know, how about Ian? How about Ian Happ and Nico Horner? What have you learned about those guys?
Well, I mean, I think Ian is very, what I love about Ian is very like dedicated and serious about his craft. And the detail that he kind of prepares with is really cool. For Nico, it's just like, it's kind of Energizer Bunny, man. Like it's just going and going and going. And his kind of relentlessness and grit, like they, you know, that's kind of a word that gets thrown around a lot, but like he is like the definition of grit. Like it never stops. And that's a really great trait and it rubs off on other people.
Oh, we'll tell those guys. We get a chance to talk to those guys. We'll tell them. I'll give you Dansby Swanson and Seiya Suzuki. What have you learned about managing those guys?
You know, Dansby is really interesting because he's been on some other teams, kind of unlike those other guys, those first couple of guys you mentioned. And so just some perspective from having success in some other places has been interesting for sure. You know, Dansby's season, I think, like, you know, he hasn't had the offensive season that he's wanted to for sure. You know, and I think the knee kind of messing him up early in the season that derailed him a little bit. Hopefully we can get him back on track for the second half. I think that's really important to get him. I think he's doing in a good spot health-wise now, but it certainly derailed him for a little bit. You know, I think Seiya's having a pretty good season. I think, you know, if you look at his numbers right now and you look at where offense in the league is, he's having a pretty good offensive season. Offense is different this year. It's a little bit down. If you look at Seiya's numbers, he is doing a pretty darn good job. It's quiet. It doesn't feel like super loud, but he's doing a pretty good job.
I'll ask you about one more guy in like the micro. We get asked about him more than maybe anyone else by fans, and that's PCA, right? Like the speed is easy to see. The glove is easy to see. So hyped as a prospect and who he came here for in a trade. He has that at bat in the Saturday game against Milwaukee where he rallies 0-2 count, drives the ball to right field, puts you guys ahead, seems like a mature at bat. He's had stand-up triples. That's easy to profile. But, like, what do you think he profiles as an offensive player at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, Pete is a player that there's been players, very many similar players like this, and it's just it's easy to see his physical gifts. For even for fans, right? It's just they just jump out at you. And those players have come with the biggest expectations. And they often come with the largest learning curve too. That's just kind of the way it is. And so Pete's like still needs at bats. There's no question. Like experience just facing major league pitching. Like sometimes it's the failures too, but we just got to keep Pete going in the right direction. He's an unfinished offensive player. There's no question about unfinished hitter. And we've just got to keep making progress with him as a hitter. It's not always linear. And sometimes it's frankly, some of the at-bats are tough to watch. Right. But we just got to keep making progress with him because it's where you know, there is a great player in there. You don't know when it's going to come out exactly, but there is a great player in there.
We're talking to Craig Counsell. I know, you know, your job is as manager, like you said, win a game today, but you have front office experience. It's July. You understand the conversation around the trade deadline. Theo Epstein once told Spiegs and I on the show, like, even if you're in a competitive window, you can never waste an opportunity to sell by like lying to yourself about what you are in that particular year, because those opportunities when you're supposed to be competitive are so infrequent. Do you share that philosophy in general, if it came to that?
I'm not sure I understand what he said. Can you?
Yeah, so I mean, this was in 20, what, Speaks, 17?
It was in 17. And he was admitting that they were going to have to consider selling if they didn't get it together by around the time the deadline came.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always just look at it like you just got to make good decisions. Like, whatever a good decision is, make the good decision. So it's simple as that. Like, for me, I don't know.
You know, it's an interesting spot, Craig, because, like, manager value and what it is, I remember during the press conference, you talked very specifically about it's a lot of good decisions kind of lining up, and that accumulates the value. Is a half season enough to see what a manager's value is? Because it's been a tough go, as you know.
I don't know. I mean, I know my philosophy hasn't changed there, so I'm going to keep doing that. And I still think that's my job, so that's not going to change.
We were wondering who the best offensive player you had was as a teammate and how it impacted you guys in the lineup when you were like, oh, damn, that guy was carrying us, and like the presence of the superstar as a player.
The best offensive season probably that I ever saw was probably Luis Gonzalez in 2001.
I'm looking at it right now. Figured that's where you're going to go. That's pretty good. 57 homers, 142 RBIs, for Luis Gonzalez, OPS over 1.1. So yeah, that's the question. What was the impact for you guys knowing that you had a dude who was just like dominating like that? How did that have an effect on the rest of the lineup, if it did?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was a great offensive team, actually, but it was obviously a good, very good team. I mean, it helped me. I hit in front of them. I mean, I knew they weren't going to try to walk me, because why would you? But it didn't make me any better, really. You know?
No.
The thing it helped is that you have one player just creating so many runs. I mean, that's what those seasons do. He was by himself just creating a massive number of runs. And so he's basically taking the burden off, you know, players like myself or whoever, other players in the lineup.
So psychologically, does it help Bryson Stott or Alec Bohm to know that they've got superstars around them in the lineup to improve? Is that a real thing in MLB?
Look, I think obviously players having great years, there is some psychological benefit to it. Like, I can't tell you exactly how much, but of course, like watching a guy have a great year around you, he's doing great things for your team that clearly is going to make you feel good.
Hey, you carried him in the 2001 NLCS, okay?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe for five games. Yep.
Just saying, give yourself a little credit. All right, Craig. Well, thank you for the time, man. As always, go get him tonight, and we'll see you at the ballpark soon.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank
Craig.
You. As manager of the Cubs, Craig Counsell. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
Redirect.
All right, everyone, have a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. Thank you to Craig Counsell for joining the show today. Happy 21st birthday to Peter Hansen, our terrific intern. I think we've prepared him well for Mully and Haw. Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka, Twitch chat, video stream. Thank you, sirs. Thank you to Sean Sears in for our executive producer, Shane Reardon. Chris Tannehill making us sound better than we are each and every day. For Matt Spiegel, I'm Danny Parkins. We are Parkins and Spiegel. This is The Score.
All right, I got to go here, guys. I got something.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.